The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai, episode 278. Welcome to the Business Couch with Dr. Yishai, where we talk about applying high leverage psychology in your business and life. I'm your host, Dr. Yishai Barkadari, licensed psychologist, private practice owner, speaker, executive coach, and consultant. I became a psychologist to learn how to leverage psychology and help others do the same. For over a decade, I've been tracking how psychology gets in the way of smart and results-driven people. For years, I've developed frameworks and tools to help them leverage psychology instead to launch themselves forward. It's my mission to share my hard-earned lessons with you so you can launch yourself forward too. I can't wait to talk high leverage psychology with you so you can learn to take higher leverage action today. We're taking a well-earned break between seasons 5 and 6, but I wanted to share some of my favorite and best episodes with you in the meantime. Today, I'm talking about why habits are only half the equation for success. You'll hear me deep dive into the two brain systems that create our life circumstances, your habit brain and your adaptive brain. I'll unpack how they work together or against each other and show you how to leverage them to create more success in work, relationships, and life. And now, without further ado, let's dive into A Tale of Two Brains. It was the best of decisions. It was the worst of decisions. In 1981, Stephen Callahan shipped off from Newport, Rhode Island in a 21-foot, one-man yacht he personally designed and christened the Napoleon Solo. His plan was to enter into a recently founded race across the Atlantic Ocean. And he had to cross the Atlantic just to get to the starting line, a feat that he anticipated would take a few weeks, or at most, a month. Callahan was no rookie, though, as some of the unique features of the Napoleon Solo could readily attest to. He stopped off in Bermuda before making the trip to England to prep and stock up on the equipment he would need for the third annual and highly anticipated race called the Mini Transat at Penzance. The trip to England was unremarkable, and he was excited to join the third annual long-distance small boat race in one-man ships competing to cross the Atlantic for the thrill, love of the sea, fame, and glory, which had just been started in 1978. For Callahan, it wasn't just for fun or a thrill, though. His marriage recently ended, feeling his life was in tatters. This was an opportunity to prove his worth, to find renewed strength and perseverance, to begin to carve a new path forward for the rest of his life. In every endeavor, every venture that we as humans undertake, whether a voyage at sea, a business venture, or creating a vision for our lives and futures, we have two forces that work both in tandem and in tension with each other. They help us dream and do, to adapt and accomplish, to reach and reevaluate, to seek and succeed in our goals and dreams. I call these two forces in tension that work in tandem, your habit brain and your adaptive brain, like your bicep and tricep, two muscle groups that help you lift, push, and pull. Your habit brain and adaptive brain work together, yet also push and pull at each other to help you perform and achieve. But in order to really engage one of them to its highest capacity and performance, you need to let the other slacken. Just as you need to let your triceps lengthen and slacken when you do a full bicep curl. Your habit brain is your automating and streamlining system. It makes decisions quickly and increases efficiency. How does that work in your brain? Here's the simplified neuroscience play-by-play for your habit brain in action. It all starts with a novel thought or decision. When you're thinking, a set of nerve cells, also called brain cells or neurons, fire together. Often, a novel thought or decision links two or more other thoughts, ideas, or concepts together. Decisions bring together different information and perspectives, along with trying to pick the best path forward. Every time a single brain cell fires, it consists of an electrical signal that stimulates the release of chemicals, which are also called neurotransmitters. When that signal reaches the end of that brain cell or that neuron, those chemicals need to traverse a gap, which is called a synapse, and the chemicals then bind to the next neuron, causing the next one to fire off when enough chemicals trigger the signal. In a way, it's like a relay race, where at the end of each leg, the neuron holds out a baton for the next one to grab. Only the baton is a bunch of tiny chemicals, and they get thrown across that short gap to get caught by the next brain cell to keep the signal going. When a brain cell picks up enough of the baton-like chemical and takes off, that's known as action potential. And that's when it fires off. Circuits are bundles and series of neurons that fire in tandem, either due to intensity, like the temperature getting ramped up high enough to trigger your thermostat to turn the AC on, or by a parallel process, like watching and listening at the same time, or sequentially, kind of like a bunch of dominoes, one going after the other. The thinking part of our brains has a lot of pattern recognizers, and it's designed both to anticipate and to create new pattern templates. Kind of like how relay runners get in position and stick their hand back when they're ready to receive the baton to take off. That's what a lot of your pattern recognizers in your brain are doing. They're getting ready to take off. The more we experience, think, do, or validate a thought, a belief, an idea, or an action, the more those neurons end up firing together, and then they wire together. And that's the process of inching ever so closer to decrease the time lapse, to increase efficiency, and it increases a sense of predictability, anticipation, which in turn allows us to build up more thoughts, beliefs, ideas, and action on top of a more tight-knit or solid foundation. Over time, with repetition, reward, or other kinds of reinforcement, it solidifies as those chemicals are repeatedly released, the neurons repeatedly fire together, and the process encourages our brain cells to actually inch closer and closer together so that the circuit and the system crystallizes. Imagine, if you will, that a relay race actually involved throwing the baton from one runner to the next. But the more you practice, the closer you can get until it's almost just like a handoff. That's what your habit brain does, and it leads to less need to calculate, think, and less energy spent to throw that baton. In psychology, another way of thinking about it is that a conscious thought that's repeated and validated becomes an automatic thought, which then, over more repetition, becomes so fast that it ends up bypassing conscious awareness and forms a belief, on the basis of which we then filter, interpret, anticipate, respond, and interact with the world and with others. As an entrepreneur or leader, this part of your brain helps you and your teams get in the groove of processes, procedures, and workflows that streamline your work and the work your teams do to grow and scale your business. The habit brain is so powerful and useful when the road ahead is clear and smooth with no obstacles or sudden changes in traffic or direction. Your habit brain is just like a car that has a spectacular cruise control and can accelerate when you need it. It's like an energy-saving, cruise-control, autopilot system for you. But what happens when there's a detour, an obstacle, a sudden slowdown in traffic? Or the opposite, when everything is speeding up, growing and scaling faster than your current autopilot systems can handle? What happens when change is necessary and you need to adjust or pivot? Imagine you're in your habit brain vehicle, heading at a steady pace for the Grand Canyon. If all you had was your habit brain, it would be like your autopilot cruise control car had no brakes or steering. no manual override. The only option is to perpetually be on autopilot with no brakes or steering. The moment you need to turn, to change direction, or dodge an obstacle, your autopilot car suddenly feels like an out-of-control death trap waiting to happen. To avoid that death trap, you need another system, a second brain. One that can help slow down your habit brain and let you take a different vector or approach. You need a system that can create disruption, that can be in tension with, but at the same time work in tandem with your habit brain. Because autopilot and cruise control are great under the right conditions, but absolutely terrifying and terrible in the wrong conditions. When you need a manual override, your adaptive brain shows up because its job is to save the day. It stimulates new awareness, analysis, and action when change is necessary. In a way, your adaptive brain is designed to be disruptive. Its job is to pull back, to engage manual override, to hold off on passing the baton, to get the car to alter its current trajectory. And here's how that works in your brain. For your adaptive brain to work, it needs to have a tagging and overriding system so that it knows when to engage and has a way to switch off the habit brain's autopilot. Your brain has a system through which every bit of information is being constantly filtered and sorted. It's a lot like the mail sorters that the post office uses, or coin sorters for those of you out there who've ever bothered with them. As information passes through, your adaptive brain is passively monitoring all of it, and it uses your past experiences, your memories, to decide what's important to slow down and pay attention to, or to make a change, versus what can be left alone for your habit brain to just do its thing. It's sorting the quarters from the pennies, the change direction information from the leave it alone information, the gold from the mud. It's not always worth slowing down to pick up a penny, but it might be for $100. Or when your wallet is falling out of your pocket. And once it detects something worth switching on your manual override, it then has to get your attention. Sometimes that's in the form of pulling your attention towards something, and other times it's in the form of delivering a shock to your system. Even once it has your attention, it then needs to try to get you to make the right kind of shift, which might mean slowing down, speeding up, or changing direction instead of plowing on. Because if it only grabbed the wheel and swerved indiscriminately, it could put you in just as much danger. Your adaptive brain, as it turns out, needs to be very complicated, intricate, and fine-tuned as a system to work well for you. In fact, that complicated, intricate, fine-tuned system has a name in neuroscience and a colloquial name. It's called your limbic system, or, and I bet this is going to be a surprise, it's also called your emotional brain. And while there are hundreds of books and millions of words and podcast episodes on how to harness your habit brain, how to build habits and how to make them work for you, there are very few books, articles, or podcasts that really dig into and uncover as detailed an understanding of your adaptive brain. I could talk about this topic for hours and hours, and in fact, I often do. I talk about it all the time in interviews, on my podcast, with entrepreneurs and CXOs alike. It's so needed, especially right now. Because as the past year taught us, changes are a constant in life and business, whether sudden acceleration or twists and turns. So many entrepreneurs, leaders, businesses, and humans have struggled with and against their adaptive brain, their emotional system, because of a faulty understanding of how it works. We cannot predict the changes, and we can't predictably be on the new road before those changes happen. But we can learn to harness our adaptive brains. In Callahan's case, as is so often the case when sailing, you need a mix of your habit brain and your adaptive brain. You need your habit brain to help you learn, improve, and do what needs to be done efficiently and effectively without wasting energy on thinking. But you also need your adaptive brain to help you take in new information, tag it, make course corrections, and alter your actions to keep yourself headed where you want to go. For Callahan, it wasn't just a boat race. It ended up being more than trying to put a new life together. Not only did Callahan both need his habit and adaptive brain for thriving, but he needed it just as much for surviving. Little did he know, his disappointments would multiply and his boat would shortly be joining the growing pile of damaged parts of his life beyond repair. Nor did he realize the gargantuan unexpected feat that lay ahead. Facing 76 days of isolation, threat of starvation, dehydration, predation, and drowning before finally drifting to salvation. One thing is clear. To overcome all of his adversity, Callahan would need every ounce of his two brains working together. And if they worked against each other, he could easily have been doomed. Callahan pushed off on September 26th, 1981, starting the race with 58 other ships. But his was among several that were damaged in short order due to a terrible storm. Fortunately, unlike some of his competitors, his boat was repairable, but regrettably, he had to drop out of the race and dock in La Coruña, Spain. Frustrated, disappointed, and embittered, Callahan did not mindlessly stay in the race, which would have led him to certain doom. He slowed down, took a couple of months to repair his ship, and geared up for the return trip home. He then left Spain on January 29th, 1982, heading across the Atlantic again for Antigua. 7 days out, while Callahan was sound asleep with his boat rocking on the water, a storm that had been slowly brewing whipped itself into a gale that caused a collision, tearing a chunk out of the outer hull of the Napoleon Solo. If the jolt wasn't enough, the salt water pouring into the cabin certainly yanked Callahan out of sleep and into the unique panic felt only when a cataclysmic event tears a crater in your existence and imminent future. It was a moment that his life hinged on. A moment he had to take in every bit of information he could, formulate a new plan of action, and execute, or the sea would execute him. Fortunately, his nautical expertise buoyed both his ship and his mind for long enough that he could inflate his lifeboat, dive back into the now underwater cabin of his swamped and sinking ship to grab a knife, a sea survival guide, and his emergency bag. Safe again on his life raft, Callahan received a reprieve from the jaws of death. But the raging storm still threatened his temporary lifeboat, and the cold threatened to engulf his body in hypothermia. Callahan survived the night, and come morning, he took stock of everything he had and his newfound predicament. He discovered 3 water purifiers that consist of World War II era solar stills, 8 pints of emergency water, a spear gun, a pencil, a logbook, and some flares, among some other equipment. With his limited equipment, Callahan plotted his likely location and course of action. If he could make it to the nearest shipping lane, then he could be spotted and get picked up by a ship. The problem was that he couldn't get the solar stills to produce drinkable water. He had only a few days' water in reserve, and he was 2 weeks from drifting into the nearest shipping lane. His adaptive brain needed to kick into action, and Callahan chose to tear apart one of the solar stills in the hopes that he could reverse engineer how it works and figure out how to get the other 2 up and running. Callahan continued to face obstacle after obstacle. After a couple of days, he needed to hunt for food, and he spent several days in trial and error, teaching himself how to try to catch a fish with nothing but a spear gun. But then the firing mechanism on the spear gun broke, and his fishing distance went from up to 6 feet to just a foot and a half. Patience, slow learning, and perseverance saved him. But it took 14 days after he got stranded to catch his first fish. And only after learning to consistently feed himself can he begin to try to save some fish by stringing it up to dry so he can save it for later. Callahan drifted into a shipping lane and finally saw a ship. And in his excitement, he lit a flare and tried to get the attention of the ship. Even in the night, the ship seemed to be turning towards him. But then it passed right by. And over the next few days, he saw a handful of ships, tried everything he could to get their attention, to signal them, but they all sailed on by. None of them saw him. And it was a huge blow. He had so many emotions, so much loss, repeated over and over again. He couldn't lay straight in the cramped lifecraft. He could only sleep an hour at a time. Callahan was getting saltwater sores, and his skin was cracking, and the salt was literally getting rubbed into his wounds all day and night. On day 46, he impaled a fish on his spear like he had been. But the fish broke off the tip, was swimming under the raft, and ripped a hole in the bottom ring. Callahan spent 10 days trying to repair it and reinflate it, and after 10 days, he gave up. On a now unstable and barely floating raft, Callahan gave up not just on himself, his prospects, but also on his future. And he lay there, with his will to live slipping away, until his adaptive brain kicked into gear again. And he realized that if he does nothing, he's going to die. And his fear of death strikes him hard. In desperation, Callahan searched the raft again and again, finally figuring out that he could use a fork to try to help keep a patch in place to reinflate the raft. On day 65, the solar stills he was using were no longer functioning. The cloth at the bottom was so damaged and destroyed by the salt water, and all he had was 3 pints of water left. And at that time, in Callahan's mind, there's an internal battle being raged between just drinking all the water he can and trying to ration it out to keep himself alive. Callahan called the characters in his mind the crewman and the captain. And one of them was on autopilot, and the other one was doing everything it could to try to help him adapt and survive. The captain won the battle for rationing his water. And by the last 3 days, Callahan is totally out of resources, barely even holding on to hope. When he saw an island, he was finally feeling relieved, but it was only momentary, because as he drifted closer, he realized that all around the island were sharp coral reefs and high cliffs, nowhere that his lifeboat could carry him so that he can survive. Callahan spent a total of 76 days on his life raft, floating across 1,800 nautical miles of ocean. He fought every day to keep his meager supplies and boat in repair, to feed and hydrate himself, to fend off sharks, to stay sane, and to survive. And on April 21st, 1982, a fishing boat was actually drawn to him because of a pack of birds that kept flying around and circling because of this small ecosystem that had been created by the guidance of that survival guide. The fishermen picked him up off the coast of Mary Galante, a small island southeast of Guadalupe. Every time he was in crisis, Callahan's adaptive brain kicked back into gear. It fed him hope and despair, excitement and disappointment, security and fear. It pushed him to think differently, to keep trying, to take a new perspective, to analyze, plan, and take action. And what if you could tap into and harness every time your adaptive brain kicked in. And here's my call to action for you today. Take the time to shift out of your habit brain. Take the time to gain new awareness. Take the time to conduct whatever analysis is appropriate in that time you can take. And take the time to pivot your action plan. And on that note, I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. If you learned something valuable today, take a moment to rate and review the podcast. It helps grow the show and gives more smart, high-performing, results-driven people like you the ability to learn and apply high-leverage psychology to your business and life. The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai podcast is produced by Dr. Yishai and PodTech. Music by www.purple-planet.com. Dr. Yishai is a psychologist, but not your psychologist. The conversations and content of this podcast do not contain or create any psychology practice, diagnosis, or therapist-patient relationship with the guest or listener. The information contained in this publication is for general informational purposes only and shall not be relied on or construed as coaching advice or therapy. So do your own research before using anything from this podcast. Thanks again for listening. I hope today's episode fulfilled my mission to help you leverage psychology better in your business and life.